Good afternoon, meeting. Good afternoon, members. We'll call this meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. There is one order of business today, and that is the wrap-up of House File 934. I want to thank the members for participating in the testimony yesterday and getting the amendments complete. We'll now move to the Representative Erickson. You moved.
Yes, and because I moved, Mr. Chair, I think they turned down the air. But I think I'll stay here.
Okay, all right.
I was right underneath the air vent, and it was too cold.
So first, let's someone like to move the minutes? Representative Myra will move the minutes dated March 21st. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members will now move on to member discussion regarding House File 930. Should have the number. House File 934. Any discussion? Representative Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just make my comments brief because I think we heard themes and lots of things from all the testifiers yesterday. But I want to concentrate on the finance pieces. And this bill goes in the opposite direction of everything I've been working for here at the legislature regarding finances. I've been working on adequacy, having better adequacy for school funding, and this bill, not a lot, but it does cut overall education dollars in this budget, $21 million. I've been working for need-based funding so that we fund fairly and adequately the needs of kids for wherever they live all around the state, and this bill goes backwards. It freezes compensatory, it freezes special ed, it freezes adult basic education. And when you freeze funding, then over time that is a cut. And in the case of special education, this is a huge cut. Not to mention what we're doing with the integration aid being eliminated for the cities of the first class, and then in the case of Minneapolis and St. Paul, turned into property taxes. And that's my third concern, and something else I've been working for in this committee, and that is to have education be state funding and not property taxes. And if we go out, taking into account the aid on the formula and then the subterranean freezing and therefore cutting over time of special education, doesn't take us any more than to go out till the year fiscal year 15, and we have a minus $37 per pupil on average statewide. And of course, because this is a winners and losers bill, that would be much greater for some districts than for others. So I think those are three basic tenets that we should all be for: adequate funding, fair need-based funding, and not raising property taxes to fund our schools. And this bill takes us in the wrong direction for that. I would urge us all to take a look at the governor's working group on education finance that starts next week, where we can look at reforms, which I think some are needed with integration funding and the compensatory funding and so forth. But to go in this direction ahead of that thoughtful work, I think, is the wrong decision. And then last thing I want to say, I'm not really going to comment on the policy because I'm thinking Representative Breinert and Representative Mariani and others may want to comment on that, and I would agree with their comments. But the last thing I want to say is I think, and I'm very hopeful that the public will pick up on this to help us not do it, and that is the insidious dynamic between the vouchers that are in this bill, the increased, someone last night called it massive funding increases for charter schools. We all know that they are not set up in the main for special education students. So when you fund those schools and then you defund special ed, especially in the cities of the first class where the vouchers are being tried, then you end up with the special ed kids being in the public schools and then you're going to compare, and we're all into this accountability and testing, you're going to fairly compare when there's a very different population, and this bill enables and encourages that different populations to happen in the different schools. I think that's a very ugly dynamic in this bill, and so hopefully we can improve it a lot before the end of session. And those are my comments, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to comment on the process that I think could be improved, or, like I said, the policy. But I did finish reading Sunday Diane Ravitch's book, The Death and Life of the Great American School System. And I wish we would all read it and take it to heart. And I think that would inform us definitely to do a lot different policy than what is in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Other comments from members of the committee? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then Representative Reiner will be next to my boss.
Am I first, Mr. Chair?
You are, ma'am.
Thank you.
You're always first, Representative
Thank you,
Erickson.
Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the work that you've done very much because I think you took a very thoughtful approach to some weaknesses that we have in funding in this state. And the integration aid was supposed to have a significant purpose when it was enacted. It has not accomplished that purpose. In fact, in the statute, I read that the program's main emphasis is on interracial contacts, and that's not been accomplished. So for us to call attention to how integration aid has been used over the years, even though I think in the last couple of years, districts did get the message from us and started being accountable to what the intent of integration aid was, it had in prior years been abused, this generous amount of dollars. It had not served its purpose, and so you have done probably what no other legislator would do, and that's call attention to the fact that we have funding that is not serving its purpose and is, in fact, being abused at a level, I would say, until the last couple of years, that is unconscionable. So I appreciate that very much, and we're going to continue to look at this. But, Mr. Chair, I congratulate you on having the courage to put this in front of the public and in front of us. Representative Greiling, in regard to special education is on the policy agenda for next year. As you know, it's a formidable task to take a look at federal standards versus state standards, or I should say law and rule. And we want to take a very thoughtful analysis, do a thoughtful analysis of special education laws and rules in this state, and then determine to what extent we have broadened the definition of special educational needs to the point where we need to have our stakeholders present to explain to us why it is that we are not doing as I heard yesterday, but instead labeling more and more of our children at too early an age. Because what I heard some testifiers say yesterday, and it's something I certainly agree with, is that in their early years, our elementary students in kindergarten and first grade are getting labeled. And that proceeds into second and third grade, and suddenly we discover that, oh, it's because they couldn't read that they got a label, and that label stays with them throughout their schooling. And we have to take a closer look at what is happening in K-3, where I think in this state we do a magnificent job in educating our children, but we're missing something when it comes to the labeling. In regard to Diane Ravitch has been around the block many times. I have great respect for her. I had her analyze our teacher licensure several years ago, and I have not read her book, Representative Greiling, but Diane Ravitch told me at that time that our licensure provisions that pointed back to our colleges of education were so weak in content that she didn't know how any of our children could get a really, really great content education in Minnesota because our teachers were taught in pedagogy rather than in content. So Diane Ravitch, I have as I said, I have great respect for her, but she has changed her tune a few times, too, and so I will read her book and be able to have a good discussion with you. But, Mr. Chair, all in all, this is a bill about reform. This is a bill that has courage behind it. Yes, not everybody's going to like it, but at least we can have a thoughtful debate about much of what is in here. And I, for one, am going to work closely with you and the others in making sure that we can figure out what in this state is going to provide the best education. It is not necessarily going to be an increase in funding, but it is going to be teacher effectiveness, principal evaluation. It's going to be looking to the 21st century in the way that we pay teachers, because we want to reward excellence. We want to reward those in the classroom who are understanding that their job is to increase learning and raise achievement. We want to help those who want to teach but may not be as effective. We want to find ways to do that. And so, Mr. Chair, in summary, I think that we're going to move forward with this bill, and I think in conference committee we're going to have some great discussions with our counterparts in the Senate and as well as with the public. And in the end, I think that this is the year to demonstrate that with courage and with thoughtfulness, we can have the best K-12 system in the nation.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Overall, I find this bill deeply troubling, and I'm going to say a few things broadly about the bill. The special education freeze, I think, is simply misguided. There may be an opportunity for that after we look at reforming the entire special education classification and the issues that Representative Erickson raised, but the freeze is going to have serious consequences for many of our districts. The repeal of the integration aid, I think, was spoken to very effectively by many yesterday, but I am equally concerned and perhaps more concerned about the repeal of the integration rule. Not to take into account the advice of the advisory group that we convened as a legislature and worked very hard at trying to help us redirect those dollars appropriately, is something I think we're guilty of as a legislature very often, and that's we convene expert advice, bring professionals to the table, and then leap right over them without listening to what they've had to say. So they become discouraged. They put in years of work, months of work, and then aren't listened to. And so we wonder why it's difficult to get people of that caliber to the table to advise us on quality policy. So those are broad comments. Now, I'd like to approach three issues that I consider emblematic in the policy arena. The first is the end of course language, which was added in an amendment to Representative Downey's bill. While it purported to, mirror Representative Mariani's work in this area, which was the result of a 9-month collaboration of a group of professionals, it made one critical change, and that's it added a cut score requirement. And I think it's really important to note, again, this is an issue of how do we listen to the professionals that work with us. Among the maybe more than 16 professionals who sat at the table in that effort, all members except one voted against the cut score requirement for the end of course exam proposal with strong research and academic reason. And yet, we have a passing score or cut score proposal in our language. I think that, again, is kind of a slap in the face to those who sat at the table and worked for 9 months on this effort. And strongly took a principled position against the cut score. It undermines their work, the intent of their work, and their professionalism. The second area is teacher evaluation. Not surprisingly, you'd expect me to have something to say. I'm not going to repeat my past discussion points. I do think that there's a common goal of linking teacher evaluation to performance measures. I think it's held by many. We heard some of that yesterday in testimony. However, I think the current proposal embodied in this legislation is a sandcastle. It has no foundation for the elaborate three-part structure that it proposes. In addition to the previous discussions where I've raised the lack of clarity on state assessments that would be used for the metrics, there remains a long list of unanswered questions on the district and classroom assessments that might be used in such a superstructure. How will the development of these assessments be guided? The legislation says the principal will meet with the teacher, but I'm considering more what the metrics will be. So, what metrics will be used to translate scores into performance measures? What will be the result, or will the results be dozens or hundreds of separate growth measures? And that is, will each class, course, lead to its own growth measure? How will you apply a uniform standard? How will we assess the comparability of the measures, especially when we've attached this bill attaches dramatic employment consequences to this superstructure? The third policy area I'd like to mention is school grading. Again, this is a cart before the horse kind of issue. The stakeholder group asked to advise the commissioner on the grading system ought first to be asked whether the value-added growth model data gathered over the past 2 years can actually support the proposed application this legislation requires. The consequences of labeling schools without this assurance are simply too great. So those are my three main policy issues. And then in summary, I'd just say that my greatest disappointment with this bill is that particularly in an education bill, what purports to be reform is not grounded in sound, broad-based, and objective research.
Thank you, Representative Breinart. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm a little disappointed in some of the comments already when I thought we spent the last few weeks talking about what our focus is. And our focus is the kids. And yet the comments that we're hearing right now have to do with things other than the kids. This has been called insidious, an insidious dynamic. Insidious meaning treacherous, and if that's the intent, then I'm okay being insidious. If the intent here is to close the achievement gap, whatever it takes to do that, the reforms that you have in this bill that we have debated and talked about are true change. This is the change our education system needs. And I'm very proud of the fact that over $14 billion will be spent for the first time ever in this state on education in areas that are going to make a difference. And as far as the enrollment options piece of this, I thought every kid was unique and that we wanted to give every kid an opportunity to succeed. And if we can provide different opportunities for different kids, let's do that. And the enrollment option certainly does that. It gives our parents some choice. It gives our kids some choice in schools that are not succeeding for them. And it gives them an opportunity to succeed. I am very proud of this bill. I think the reforms that are in it, I think the financing that's in it, goes a long way in addressing these issues that we've been talking about the past few weeks. And, it recognizes the facts in the field. You heard Chris Jackson yesterday talk about what it means to Minneapolis and his support of the enrollment options.
I think it was Chris Stewart.
It's Chris Stewart, I'm sorry, not Jackson, Stewart. we've heard from a lot of people yesterday, but thank you for the... So Chris Stewart yesterday talked about this. We heard from kids who the public school system just didn't work for them. And so the enrollment option gave them the option to succeed. We've heard from public school kids that has worked for them, and that's great, and that's exactly the way the system should work. That's why options are so important to the education system. So again, I appreciated the dialogue and the conversation we have. I hope our continued comments aren't going to politicize this and really look at an honest debate about whether or not these solutions are going to work, which I strongly believe they will. And I appreciate the opportunity to present this to both the public and the governor, because this is a darn good bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Woodard. And members, before we proceed, I just want to make an observation that yesterday Representative Breinart, Representative Greiling, and Representative Downey all suggested that we wrap up for the night and then come back here to offer our closing comments. And I think I was not a big fan of that, and I did not like that. And in hindsight, now seeing how everyone's gotten a fresh night of sleep and there's been a good dialogue, I actually think that was a pretty good idea. So I just I wanted to thank those members for that. Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also find this bill incredibly troubling. For the same things that Representative Reinert so eloquently said, I think we have a convoluted, muddy process to evaluate the most critical element in a child's education, the teachers. It also, I believe, is an assault on collective bargaining, putting up artificial time frames for negotiations, repealing a January 15th deadline when historical context shows us that that deadline works. We had strikes when we didn't have the deadline. We didn't have strikes when we did. So if the deal was to make sure that the kids were in class learning with the most important element that they have to learn from, the classroom teacher, then the January 15th doesn't work. Also, effectively, the QEO freezes salaries for teachers, and I don't like that either. We can't even, as teachers, we can't even negotiate the 403B vendors for our retirement plans. This undercuts collective bargaining. First week of school, when I have my eighth graders all sitting there, one of the very first things we do is we set down the rules, and we sit together and we say, how do we, in this classroom, get along? What kinds of things do we need to set up? What kind of structures, rules, laws do we need to have in this classroom to all of us get along and succeed and do well? And then we together, all the kids, talk about, well, we need to do this and we need to do that and we need to be able to do this, and gee, what if you have to go to the bathroom? How are we going to do that? And if we're hungry, what do we do? And if we're tired, what do we do? That's what collective bargaining is in a nutshell, is everybody getting together to discuss it and negotiate and figure out what works so everybody can succeed. And I see this bill as an assault on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Slocum. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't come with any prepared remarks like some of the members here, and I'll chalk that up to being a rookie mistake, I guess. But so I'm just going to maybe free associate a little bit here. So I'm going to talk about the first part of the bill that was addressed right away, which was the integration funding and some of the purported inequities that lie in the funding solution that we have here. And I think they're built upon really a false premise, and that premise is that the current system is equitable, that the current system treats all districts fairly, and that everyone gets the same piece of the pie. And depending upon what part of the state you're from, including my district, Representative Dietrich's district, although I won't speak for her, that isn't the case. There were winners and losers created a long time ago. And so we're just supposed to, I mean, I think there's this notion that we're just supposed to sit in the committee and just accept it because that's the status quo. And the fact of the matter is, some might say we're correcting inequities that were created decades ago. Secondly, I'll speak to what I see as the other major portion of the bill, which is a policy piece, the teacher effectiveness bill. There's been a lot of commentary here. We heard from a lot of testifiers yesterday, actually really overwhelmingly positive testifiers, even with those who took exception to some parts of the omnibus bill. There seemed to be somewhat of a consensus around the teacher effectiveness piece of the bill, and I think it because it speaks to a core value, a shared value that says student achievement is the most important thing when it comes to education, and that we're no longer going to sit on our hands as it relates to that. That is the outcome that we're all after. That's what the institution is there for. That's why we all sit around this table. There have been some comments about the current system and how this system is going to create unfair instances of employment practice, unfair measures that cannot be applied evenly, and some of those are true. But I think that is built, again, on a false premise that the current system doesn't do all of those things and then some. And at the same time, I would contend it does all those things while not based in the core principle of student achievement. This bill will move forward. It will have some of those same problems, but it will be rooted in the principle that nothing is more important than student achievement. I think this bill takes many steps in the right direction when it comes to funding equity, But most importantly, it takes a step in the right direction when it comes to educational equity. And I think that's what we're all after.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's
Representative Dabney, no jokes about the shirt.
I think we've worked through the shirt. We haven't gotten to the lack of birthday treats, but we've worked through the shirt for today.
Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, it's really hard to know where to begin in discussing this bill. It reverses 30 years of education funding being based on the needs of the students and replaces it with a system that is unclear in its policy basis and rationale. It creates new funding streams without clear purpose, measures, or other elements of accountability. It makes the already complex education funding system more complex, less transparent, and less accountable. It makes the education funding system inconsistent, and I'd even say incoherent. Under the bill, a small charter school that appeared on Representative Woodward's underperforming school list can get $200, $300, $400 more per pupil, while a small traditional public school down the street loses $200, $300, $400 per pupil in the resources that it needs to help the students that walk through its doors. A few years ago, Jeffrey Canada was in town at the Minnesota meeting, if I remember correctly. And he was asked there about charter schools. And weren't charter schools the answer for urban children in underperforming schools? And he said, you know, in the Harlem Children's Zone, we run charter schools. And they're an important part of our strategy. But we'll never have enough charter schools to do the job. He said, that's why we in the Harlem Children's Zone work with the New York public schools in our area to help make sure that every option for a child is a strong option and allows them to succeed. After more than 20 years of nation-leading school choice in Minnesota, of which my children are beneficiaries as attendees to a magnet school, we have continued to increase the achievement gap at that same time. Choice, as was testified, is not the magic wand. It alone cannot be expected to have any different impact in the future on the achievement gap than it has demonstrated in the past. Even there, this bill undermines the choice system for the majority of children and families in the central cities who choose the traditional public schools each and every morning when they send their kids off to school. And I should observe that under this bill, as it stands, we'll see the shuttering of 25% or more of the charter schools in the state because of the majority's refusal to deal with, as promised, the issue of the need for the extension of the authorizer deadline. The voucher proposal has to be seen for what it is, an abandonment of our responsibility to educate and provide opportunities for our poorest children in the state. Finally, the bill avoids the hard work of supporting bold and thoughtful policy that is based on what we know works. Predictable, consistent funding for schools, all-day kindergarten, coherent, high standards, and supports for the students and teachers to achieve those standards, support for families, engaging them, and enhancing their involvement and support for their children's education. This bill confuses the volume of reform proposals with the quality of reform proposals. Where the greatest challenges are in our education system today are also where our greatest opportunities are for the children and for the state. This bill damages that opportunity, in some cases irreparably, for tens of thousands of Minnesota's most vulnerable children. It incoherently attacks the civil rights of our teachers and other staff, the people we trust with our kids in the classroom we don't trust at the negotiating table, for the contract. And leaves us in a less clear place as a state, moving backwards with the repeal, not just of integration funding, but the rejection of the value of integration in an integrated society that we have strived for in this country since its founding. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, my friend, Representative Dabney. Representative Plum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking over the extensive testimony, I heard many things such as we are close to starting the climb. Coming into high school, 4 years behind reading, 3 years behind in math, and could not write a lick. $16 million in integration aid cut to Minneapolis. Does it need oversight? Yes. And creating a generation of very good test takers. And then, again, teacher's voice. Going back to the commissioner's testimony, and when she first testified before this committee, I asked her about integration since her previous position was involved in that activity and had not seen anything that indicated actual correlation of integration to closing the achievement gap, to improving student performance. There's the funding is almost disincentivizing integration, in that once you, if you did achieve a racial balance, you would lose the funding. And apparently that was noticed, since I don't think we've had schools drop off of that funding. There's, as was noted by the former VP of Control Data that testified, there needs to be oversight. Well, it's the job of the Department of Education to do oversight. And the commissioner testified about how horrendous this was going to hurt the cities of the first class. Well, there's a city of the first class, Rochester, that has dozens, I think it's 40 to 50 languages spoken, has above average proportional of their school students in free and reduced lunch, has above average to the state students of color. In this bill, they receive an increase in per pupil funding. It doesn't bring them up to the level of Duluth and St. Paul and Minneapolis. In fact, after these decimating cuts to Minneapolis, Minneapolis still has, in 1 year, the biennium spending in Medford, and receives 188% of the funding of that in Byron. So I do think that even after these adjustments you talk about, we still have a tremendous amount of money going into Minneapolis. But this, commissioner said nearly 60 years after, and there's still this achievement gap. We've had hundreds of millions of dollars thrown into programs, and they have not been effective in closing this achievement gap of helping the students. We do not have the luxury. We cannot be disjoined from the responsibility of looking at programs that don't work, taking those resources and trying to put them into programs that can work. I want to do stuff that's going to help the students now. We continually hear, well, we've got this new study, this new report that's coming out, we can't make a decision. Well, if you wait for the committee reports, you wait for all of this information, you don't get something done. This bill while it's not perfect, does try to address the issues of getting something done for the students that we have in school now. It addresses the reality that we've been spending a great deal of money in programs that have not shown any improvement to the achievement gap, have not addressed the results, and if we have created a generation of very good test takers, then why aren't they doing better on the test? It's a fallacy to continue to push things that don't work. At least I've seen in legislation here an attempt to try something that could work. And status quo for decades has been brought up. Well, we've had that and it doesn't. A new day needs to dawn for our students, both in school and coming into school, that we will look for innovative, creative ways to make sure that they have the tools, the capabilities to achieve their a student needs to be able to become who they can be. And if we don't give them the tools, it handicaps them. Doesn't stop them, but handicaps them. And to continually ignore the vast quantity of students that don't fit the mold that we've generated for decades, it just is not what I came here to do. Now, I just feel personally that it's irresponsible for me not to look to try and do better for the students. I do not want to imply that we don't have good teachers, don't have good schools, haven't been doing a good job. But the good job we've been doing has left some behind. And what we need to do is start focusing on where we can change and improve what we're doing to help those students left behind and also help every single other student, because status quo is just a travesty.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm, like most of us here, trying to figure out, and after 20 years, I still can't figure out how to be in two places at one time, much less three. And so I appreciate your acknowledgement of me coming in while I was sitting in the other committee for almost an hour.
And Representative Mariani, just for members of the committee, I understand there's other activities going on. In the event that members have to leave the room temporarily, the chair will keep the roll call open until all, or I guess no one has asked for that. Should there be a roll call? we will not. Never mind. Representative Dabney, do you have something to tell me about the vote? Are you going to request?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If Representative Mariani would yield.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would yield.
Could we have a roll call, please?
Thank you, Representative Dabney. So, members.
Anytime.
I can assure you they were going to ask for it. Although, maybe it was Representative Slocum's job today, so maybe not.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slocum.
I should have been the one who asked for the roll call today.
Yeah. So, for members, when we go to the roll call, the chair will hold it open until all members have had a chance to vote. Obviously, one of our members is gone today. But we will. So if members do need to leave, please, especially members of the minority, don't worry. You'll have a chance to cast your vote. So, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair begging for roll calls. I love it. Well, Mr. Chair, seriously, I did put together some very quick thoughts, and I'll try to get them out quickly. One, obviously, not obviously, but I'm not going to support today's bill. And I do appreciate the work that you've put into this and your staff, and I have a great deal of respect for you, and I appreciate the mutuality of that relationship. However, let me just give you two broad areas why I can't support this bill. And one having to do with policy issues, and the other having to do with some decisions around funding issues. And I know some of this will be, I suspect, will be repetitive, so I will be quick. But let me just say, as the former policy chair of this committee, I find several initiatives here disconcerting. And I think in many ways kind of undoing some of our best bipartisan effort over the last several years. Let me start out, however, by noting a positive that probably is not going to win me a lot of votes among folks in my natural political community. I do think there are teacher evaluation work that Representative Peterson has put before us pushes in the right direction. I think there are a number of good ideas. Representative Peterson and I spent quite a bit of time together talking through the details of the proposal. And I think there's a lot there that's pretty rich and deserves some real serious attention to. So I think there are things there that we can work with. I am concerned over what I think is probably an overprescribed framework. One of the things I've learned over time here, and I'm not always correct, but is that when we develop pretty super detailed proposals in the legislature, whether we're right or wrong, we wind up inevitably getting either far out or far out ahead of people on the ground. And at the end of the day, it's the people on the ground. It isn't us. It isn't Representative Peterson or Representative Mariani who's going to have to deliver quality education for our children. And so this is just sort of one of those lessons from the playground that, you know, if people have ownership, if they're a part of it, then you can maximize the goals and the intended outcomes. And I do get, believe me, I do get that you have to push your friends often. But I think there is a difference between pushing your friends and coming up with something that is going to take way too long for folks to claim ownership of. And I think that the overprescribed, what I think is an overprescribed framework here, you know, can cause a large amount of disruption in those communities, and not all education communities are doing this, but in those communities that are in fact pushing ahead with some pretty strong research based, fully owned teacher evaluation frameworks in their schools that are showing results and have every reason to continue to show results. And so I would certainly look forward to working with the author of that bill and with you, Mr. Chair, as this bill moves forward in terms of getting the right balance on that. There are several policy initiatives, though, that I think are quite frankly misguided and frankly not supported by good research. And I'm sitting right next to Representative Myra, and so I don't want Representative Myra to take any umbrage for these comments, but I have to say, and I do appreciate the work and the effort you've put into your bill, but I have to say that the wholesale adoption of another state's school rating revenue plan and interrelated models is generally not a good idea. Minnesota is Minnesota. We're a different place than Florida, and boy, if we were going to copy someone's plan, we really should be looking at the state of Massachusetts, which looks a lot more like us, which ranks near the top of persistently of K-12 education outcomes, whereas Florida persistently rates near the bottom, in some cases at the very bottom of K-12 educational outcomes across the nation. And I think part of what we're doing, we're risking here, is that we're cherry-picking a proposal or elements of a much broader proposal. Governor Bush, in the when he was governor, not only implemented some of these policy changes, but he also pushed for massive investment in class size reductions in the state of Florida at the lower levels. as well as massive investments in literacy efforts. And even with that, at the end of the day, their results are to date still limited to certain grades and certain subject areas, certainly have had no impact in terms of who's graduating and what's coming out of their K-12 system. We're not doing any massive new investments in literacy work. We're not doing any new mass investments in class size reduction. And so I think, you know, if we're going to look at someone's model, we need to look at their entire model. Massachusetts spent a lot of money on top of using the school rating system, on top of updating their standards. And that was supported in a bipartisan manner for well over a decade. And the results are evident of the wisdom of that balanced approach. And so so I don't think that that's a good way for us to go, Mr. Chair. My good friend, Representative Downey, we've had this discussion on the grad re-implementation. I do think it's a premature rush. The whole point of having that extension was to create a better assessment system. And I know that Representative Kiefer's bill, which really, frankly, was a mirror of my bill, which really, frankly, was just the work of a broad group of really smart, diverse folks from across the state, led by former Commissioner Alice Segrin, came up with a framework that is violated by the Kiefer Amendment to Representative Downey's bill. You know, when you pull out some parts of a comprehensive proposal, it's no longer an intelligent proposal. You know, it's a cherry-picked proposal, and so what we have now is the reintroduction of a cut score, which is what got us into this mess in the first place. You don't need to have a cut score to have high standards. You don't need to have a cut score to have intelligent assessments where you can hold students accountable. This group talked through that for many months and came up with a very responsible, balanced approach that is disrupted by the language in the Kiefer bill. We also add a new high-stakes test to a whole new area with very minimal discussion in this legislature when we added biology as a high-stakes graduation requirement measured by this test. And so I appreciate what Representative Downey is wanting to do, which is to make sure we've got, you know, a assessment system that that means something, quote-unquote. I just think that this proposal puts us right back where we were, and I suspect if implemented a couple of years ago, and I know when I was chair of the policy committee chair, I had a number of my GOP colleagues on the committee who come up quietly and said, we got to do something. We're not talking just like low-income schools. We're talking middle-class schools across the state that were looking at this menace of a flawed assessment system and what it was going to do in terms of furthering opportunities for students, which, after all, is what K-12 is all about. Mr. Chair, I won't expound too much on the funding thing. It's hard for me to it would be impossible for me to support the funding decisions in this bill and then go back out into the streets of the West Side and West 7th and the East Side and North End and look at students in the eye and say that the state of Minnesota is going to continue its belief in you and its investment in you. I think that, you know, there are a number of issues here people have spoken about. You know, the voucher proposal, I think, is frankly an anathema in my psychology of what our commitment is in our state. And, Mr. Chair, I've had children in charter private schools, religious schools, public schools. Both my kids graduated from St. Paul Public Schools, my two oldest. And one of them actually participated for 2 years at a Catholic school here in St. Paul. And, Mr. Chair, we pulled him out of that school because the second year he was there, the school decided to close a week, almost 2 weeks early. And they decided to do that because the entire parish was melting down as a powerful group of parents who were interested in a particular brand of religious instruction. made it impossible for that school to be governed. It made the front news of St. Paul papers for several weeks. And, you know, that's certainly their right, absolutely their right. But we're talking about education policy being determined over religious disputes, and we're going to fund that with public dollars. I just think it's a very dangerous road that we're going down, and I don't see, I really don't see the benefit of it. We heard testimony yesterday from a number of people across the state on the integration issue. Representative Fabian and Representative Brenner and I had, I think, a very good collegial discussion afterwards on that. And Representative Fabian, you asked, a very clear question, which I think we've been wrestling with for years here. And it was the clarity of your question that kind of embarrassed me, because it's like, I wish I had been that clear about asking that question several years ago. And the question was, you know, is it about the social issue and interracial contact and knowledge versus academic achievement goals? And Representative Binder and I both immediately understood and responded, you know, what we heard in testimony, what we know from our own experience, that's a false dichotomy, that it's about both. And what we heard from folks, is, including the students, is that you need high rigor in the development of interracial communications, relationship building, working with folks in order to be successful in this society. And by doing that, you feed a hunger and a desire to do very well in academics. And in fact, academics, should not be divorced from that particular skill, certainly not in our society. And we heard testimony from folks, including the Northwest Suburban Integration District Superintendent Mark Richardson, who's was he Anoka's superintendent for a number of years? No? Okay. A well-respected educator who shared with us the positive academic outcomes that are happening with the use of integration revenue and programs like implementing programs like AVID in cross-district settings. We heard testimony from folks about the efficient use of dollars related to these collaborative districts. Commissioner Casilius, prior to becoming commissioner, was for a brief spell the superintendent of the East Metro Integration District, and she was really leading the charge about those 10, 12, 15 school districts really looking at themselves differently in terms of an efficiency model for sharing services based on this nexus of developing interracial competencies and academic skills. And so I think there's great promise there that unfortunately we're going to simply throw out. Should there be change in the formula, Mr. Chair, you've struggled with that issue over the years as I have. Yes, I think there is, because the realities on the ground across the state have changed. There was a group that came together this year that met throughout the summer and fall from almost every corner of the state. We saw many of them here yesterday. We didn't really vet their proposal. We got maybe 5 minutes to briefly hear their proposal, but they came up with a pretty creative new way in which we can continue to keep our commitment to integration and desegregation, but do it in a way that involves many more districts so that we can be real to the fact that racial diversity is something that is almost a reality in every corner of the state. And so I think there are some models there that we can use in terms of changing the integration formula. Unfortunately, this bill does not reflect that. Mr. Chair, I'll stop with that. There's so many other things. I think that Representative Guiley, you know, has been a pretty tough finance chair, and her and I don't always see eye to eye, and she often gets the better of me, and every once in a while I manage to pull off a victory on her. But I do think that she brought a perspective here that I would hope the chair would share, and future chairs would share from either party, and that is that K-12 public education, you know, forget the state fair, you know. K-12 public education is the great Minnesota get-together. It is where we come together as a people. And I think it in keeping with that reality, I think that both our policies and our funding approaches and schemes need to reflect that togetherness. I've seen other states where K-12 is the battleground. It's where Republicans and Democrats battle. It's where conservatives and liberals battle. It's where fundamentalists and atheists battle. Where lawyers make a whole lot of money, you know, trying to litigate those differences. We've minimized that in this state over the years, and we've done it by consistently applying a funding approach and a policy approach that brings us together and doesn't create winners and losers. And we need to have a more mature understanding of what that means. Winners and losers isn't just about the per pupil per district. We've heard lots of testimony from lots of districts, whether they're small districts who say, you know, gosh, we're so small, you know, we need additional support in order to deliver a certain quality. You know, as a urban guy, I get that. We've also heard from other districts that say, you know, I've got 90% of my kids, you know, that 90-90-90 framework, and on top of that, we're a regional center where we're having to meet the needs of so many competing legal requirements that we need these kind of resources. To me, it's common sense. You apply the needed resources according to the needs on the ground. And we can always debate fairly about what the right levels of that is, but we should always be guided by a sense of we're in this together, and we shouldn't be taking from one in order to create opportunity for the other. Our job, our tough job, whether we like it or not, is to create opportunities for all. So, Mr. Chair, I look forward to working with you. You're going to have, I think I've told you this in the past, you're going to have a job just dealing with the Senate. You know, to the degree that I can be helpful with that and working to correct, from my opinion, correct what I think are inherent weaknesses in several elements of this bill, I will certainly make myself available to do that. But at this point, I can't support the bill as it goes forward.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Just two quick thoughts. Number one, I just want to let you know right now, I'm going to rip off your quote on the state fair and claim it as my own, just so you know. Just want to be upfront about that. And second of all, Representative Mariani, as someone once told me in a previous term, the DFLers or the opposite party in the House may be your adversaries, but the enemy is the Senate. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just looking around and listening to people's comments and realizing that on this committee, I feel like I'm just a parent and somebody who grew up in the public schools and had a dad who is a teacher in the public schools and who has a ton of pride in our public schools. And so maybe my perspective is not as professional as others, but I heard Commissioner Casilius yesterday say that the chair's bill and the vast majority of the components in it were extreme, that the bill was extreme. And I attempted to ask a question, and you probably wisely kept me from asking the question. But I just started thinking, because I wanted to ask her, so what in the bill is extreme? And to me, choice is not extreme. Accountability is not extreme. Local control is not extreme. Local cost control is not extreme. Leveling the playing field between the collective bargaining units and the local districts isn't extreme. Formula reform isn't extreme. Measuring teacher effectiveness isn't extreme. Challenging our kids to excellence is not extreme. And I thought about all the provisions in this bill, and you know what, members, had this bill passed 2 years ago or 4 years ago, we would have gotten Race to the Top grants. So much of what we didn't measure up to in that grant application process, this bill and the action of our chair really gets to. I've heard the comment, we can't absorb this much change right now, and I think there's no doubt, Mr. Chair, that you've got a bold reform agenda here. But we've sat around for a long time, just as a parent from the outside looking in and somebody who's had the privilege of serving under some great chairs on education committees. We've had a long time to be about this business, and we haven't done it. And I think, Representative Mariani, to your comment about, I think you used the word rushing, back into this cut score. I mean, this is the only place where stopping something and going on hold for 4 years is rushing into something. So just common sense perspective, Mr. Chair, I just don't think these charges against your bill hold up. And I really think that the only folks that this seems extreme to are the people who really have an interest, maybe too much of an interest, in the installed base of what we're doing. And the kind of the union bureaucratic complex that seems to run public education from down here in St. Paul, of course, thinks that this is extreme. But to the parents and the kids that I think I heard from, the pages who came into my room, on the things I hear from my own kids, the things we heard in testimony here, this isn't extreme. This is way past due. So I think you've struck a good mix between a bold challenge, one that clearly needs to be refined, and I'm sure there's plenty of things in my own ideas and others that could be refined. And Representative Mariani and Representative Brinert, you guys have great ideas for improving these things. But just one example, we've talked a little bit about the integration funding. And going back to the OLA report, you know, there's no evidence that it improved minority student achievement. School districts really aren't bound to use it in a certain way. It's being used for all kinds of different things. In fact, you could argue that the funding formula that creates a disincentive for integration. And amazingly, racial concentration has increased, I think, in the core areas where it was, you know, attempting to be ameliorated. And so there's just a classic example where we're just clinging, I think out of good intentions, to things that just are proving that they don't work. And boy, would another working group be great? Yeah, probably would. And, you know, could we go down to another set of levels in the data? We could, but in some ways you start losing accuracy for the pursuit of precision. And I think the facts are pretty obvious that a lot of this stuff just doesn't work. And to the average person sitting outside looking in, it doesn't work. And I remember my first job where I actually managed a fairly large group of people, and I reported directly to the president of the company. And she gave me a book, and it was titled Let's Get Results, Not Excuses. And she made all of us on the management team read it. And the first time I came into her office after that and made some kind of an excuse, she opened up a word processing document, and she typed in the excuse that I gave her and said, you know, that's just not acceptable. We can find a way to get this done. And I think that's more the attitude we need to have, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that you're setting that standard. And your motto for this committee of kids first, no excuses, no exceptions, isn't extreme at all. It's about getting the results that our kids deserve, and it's about time that we really get down to the hard work of doing it. So I really thank you for fighting for our target and for being willing to build this this bold a statement of reform for the kids of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian and members, I am told we have a floor session at noon. Okay, so members, I'm not going to cut anyone off. I want everyone to get their chance to speak, but we do have a floor session at noon. I suspect that I'm going to be the one who ends up getting his comments cut off. So Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd like to start out by expressing my heartfelt gratitude to the committee. I have the utmost respect for people and the diversity of opinion that's here with regards to this bill and the process that we've gone through. I'd also like to say thanks to the staff. I think they are a marvelous group of people. And if I could segue just for 1 minute, I'd like to remind us to keep Representative Ward in our thoughts and prayers, what he's going through right now. I'm somewhat familiar with that. So I would be remiss if I didn't make some comments. I think at the first or second meeting that I was at here, We talked a lot about, leading up to that, the achievement gap and so forth, and I also talked about the funding gap. And I appreciate the fact that in this bill, we're starting to address that funding gap. It's very important to me. Representative Mariani, who's very eloquent, and we've had a number of conversations, and I appreciate those so much. He talks about being an urban guy. I'm not. You know, I wear a suit once in a while. I'm a rural guy. And out there in rural Minnesota, as I've said before, we do things differently. And we educate our kids. Our dropout rates are low. Our achievement rates are high. Our graduation rates are high. And we do it on a budget that's really, you know, representatives here at the table who come from that part of the state know we do it on a budget that really is pretty tight. And for this budget, Chairman Garofalo to take a bite, I'll say, at that funding gap, I applaud you for doing that. I think that's terrific. We've heard some different words used here about winners and losers and cherry picking and massive investments. Governor Dayton used the term crisis with regards to our fiscal state, our budget, leading into this session. And in light of what I've heard going on in other committees with regards to their budgets, I would have to say that the emphasis that this committee has placed on school funding in light of how other budgets are struggling, I'll say, and being cut, I think that we really are quite fortunate in that Chairman Groffel has fought so hard for funding for our schools. I'm sure there's going to be some differences about how it's applied and so forth, but I think that we really are quite fortunate to have that. I've enjoyed my conversations with Representative Breinert, starting at Oak Ridge, as I mentioned yesterday. It's not hard for me to understand when you talked about your daughter at one point a couple of weeks ago and you talked about her intellect and her passion. The acorn doesn't fall very far from the tree, I can tell that. So thank you for the support that you've given to me, even though at times our opinions are not the same. I am somewhat conflicted. We heard testimony yesterday, and I went to Representative Mariani because our eyes happened to meet, and I'm not going to exactly share why that happened during the meeting.
You gazed into each other's love. That's something we're thinking, but I don't think you intended it.
I'm somewhat conflicted with the charter schools and so forth. I have to admit that when I came down, my opinion of charter schools was somewhat unsettled. When I went out to some of those charter schools and I saw the looks on the faces of some of those kids and the success that they're having, I have to tell you, folks, my attitude changed because there are some marvelous things going on in some of those places. Excuse me. But I am somewhat conflicted because we've heard members of the minority community sit at the witness table and talk about the strengths of charter schools, and we've also heard witnesses from the minority table, from the minority community sit at the witness table and tell us that, you know, we shouldn't be funding them as much as we are. So I'm somewhat conflicted there. But I do appreciate the fact that they are experiencing some tremendous successes. In our small rural communities, our schools are the glue that hold those towns together. You heard the testimony. Excuse me. You heard the testimony from the superintendent of schools from Lancaster, and he talked about his student successes up there on a budget that's really quite limited. In our small towns, our schools are what hold our communities together, and we need the financing, we need the funding in those schools to be able to continue to do the good job that we are doing. And I appreciate the fact that that has been a priority of this committee and of Chairman Garofalo. I also have to say, too, that I do have somewhat of a unique perspective. In that I am a school teacher, I am a father whose sons all went through public schools. I went through the public schools. I support the public schools a lot. and now I have a unique position of also being in the legislature and now having to try to gather in all of this information, digest all of the different opinions and attitudes and philosophies about what we should do in the realm of education has been an extremely eye-opening experience for me. I will support the bill. I'm not in favor of continuing with the status quo. I know that my good friends who are teachers and administrators back home are not afraid of a challenge to be able to go out and do the best job that we possibly can for our number one priority, which is our students. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, last Friday, I had an opportunity to speak at the MESA conference with Representative Erickson. And I opened up by explaining to them that probably 8 or 9 years ago, I was their worst nightmare. I think I was a businessman. I looked at the schools, and I knew everything that they had to do to fix it all. So I ran for the school board and got on there and quickly ascertained how little I understood about education. And so got a very good education over the 5 years, and then coming up here, getting to watch and listen and glean from all of you who've been around the industry for that long, I think is a fantastic opportunity. So I really appreciate all the work that has gone into this process. A couple of things, just first of all, I think I've got to make one comment. We all have our little areas, I guess, that we've worked with, but Representative Dabney has made the comment a couple of times that we were taking away the civil rights of some of the people involved here. And I really have to take exception to that, because I don't think we should diminish the actual civil rights that are given to each and every one of us, like the right to vote or the right of protection. Because certainly I understand that we feel there's a right, but this right of striking is in statute. We change statute all the time. We do that because it's a sign of the times. We change many things in statute. So I don't want to take away from truly, again, what we talk about is civil rights, because the right to strike is not one of those. And I want to reiterate that the intent of this change of the collective bargaining process is simply the process itself. I in no way want to take away what we collective bargain about. I think that's extremely important and want to have that intact. In fact, Representative Mariani suggest we look at the Massachusetts model, and I'd note that Massachusetts does not have the ability to strike. And I think that was it has merit to look at models like that. Next, I want to talk about a little bit of what we heard yesterday as the testifiers came through. A lot of people talked about the integration aid and that being done away with. And I kept thinking as we heard more and more about people questioning that, because they talked about many of the programs they had and the great results they were getting and some of the highlights, which I think were fantastic. But I kept thinking, where in this 118 pages are we suggesting that you have to do away with programs? If these programs are working and they're getting results that we want and we aspire to, then what we're allowing the districts to do in hopefully distributing our dollars a little more equitably is to fund them, prioritize, and make sure you fund those programs. And no one is suggesting that we do away with those programs. I think in the past, then look at my years of, I guess, serving on the board, too, I always thought we do a great job inside the education field of coming up with new definitions, and maybe we go to the thesaurus to say what's the next look. Maybe it's, I think when I started, it was paradigm shifts, and now I think we've moved to rubrics, and we've got great words to describe our process, but it seems to me we've not done a great job of implementing those things that we need to do to get the change that's desired. And we've all talked about the achievement gap. Both sides have talked about the achievement gap, so I know it's something that we're extremely concerned about, and the fact of the matter is that we haven't closed it. So I believe this bill is an opportunity to look at that, and it's a new way of looking at things. I really appreciated Chris Stewart's comment the other day when he talked about, you know, it's a lot of presentation, how we talk about it. He took exception to talking about good and bad teachers, which I really thought was a great comment. And so, as I've said before, this is a new way of looking at things. I know maybe the reform
word is overused, but it is simply a new way of looking at things. And I appreciate everyone who has stepped up and offered different approaches, and I think that is an opportunity for us. And finally, Mr. Chair, you made a comment a couple weeks ago, I think, actually. You talked about all the kids running around with, you know, iTouch, iPad, iWhatever's next, and how technology is so fast-paced that it's hard for us, maybe an older generation, to keep up. And I believe that it's extremely important for us to really take notice of that, because if we don't embrace that and if we don't understand that change is going on all around us, we're going to get left behind. And we're going to get left behind by that younger generation who is going to actually find an educational product that works for them. So I think we really need to make sure that we embrace that, because you know, the status quo isn't an option here. You're either moving forward or you're moving backwards. And now I can understand after how people can say my good friend, because I think I can say that now about Representative Greiling after you sit here and you get to have maybe a little few sidebar conversations. I have to go back to her comment that I used probably right away in this committee, is that we're here for the kids, not for the adults. Thank you.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to gear my comments towards you, since you are the one who is going to be the one we know for sure will be shepherding this bill through the process. And some people are talking about it like it's the end of the process. It is really just the beginning. And so I give you my best wishes and some comments. I want to congratulate you. I think that you have... well, Ms. Kelleher said yesterday, you are now the godfather of change. And I think that does characterize this bill very well. We have change at the policy level. We have change at the finance level. We have rural change. We have urban change. We have suburban change. It's kind of like there was a shot heard around the state that this bill has a lot of change in it. And I think that was evident yesterday by the amount and the diversity of testifiers yesterday, and that was really enjoyable. And if nothing else, to bring that many people out, and just not in the numbers, but the diversity of the people that we had testifying yesterday was really gratifying. So thank you for that thus far. First of all, to the little bit about the bill, I want to thank you for acknowledging that poverty exists in the suburbs, and that and shining some light, as I have tried to do for the past 20 years, about the compensatory education formula being flawed. And some people believe that poverty doesn't exist in the suburbs, or they don't want to believe that it does. And but I have tried to express this over and over again, and I still just am awed that some people are just not even willing to take this step forward and at least a look at some reform. We in the Anoka-Hennepin School District, we are the largest school district in the state. We educate 5% of the population in this state. We have the third highest count of free and reduced. There are some districts where we have three times the amount of free and reduced kids in our district, and we only earn half what they do per pupil. And that is based on school size. That is the determining factor of that formula. That does not allow us to generate the revenue. And so to that point, though, if you still don't believe that that poverty exists in the suburbs, and I know there are a lot of other communities that feel the same way, that they just don't get enough of that that discussion going here, we have our homelessness in Anoka County. The Anoka County side of the Anoka-Hennepin School District has doubled in 2009. Half those kids are children. I mean, half the homeless are children. In the Anoka-Hennepin School District, yesterday somebody talked about the indicator of child success is the education level of the mother. In the Anoka-Hennepin School District, people over 25, 25% of those people have a bachelor's degree. So there are obstacles. So I just want to thank you for acknowledging that and bringing the suburban perspective to light here and allowing us to have that discussion. On the integration changes. That was a very courageous change. I would like to encourage you as you go forward to look at, instead of maybe just making a change, really actually reforming the formula. When we went and looked at some of those charter schools, I was very surprised on how so many of those students looked alike. When we went to Harding, I was so surprised at how many of those students looked very similar. And when you go to Champlain Park High School, you will see 3,000 kids in one school, and they don't look the same. That's where diversity is happening. And with diversity brings many challenges. We welcome those challenges, and we want diversity. We want integration. That is a statewide goal, but it brings many challenges. There were some common themes that I heard in that discussion about integration and integration funding that I really do think would behoove you to look at. For example, the AVID program. That is something that can actually be used by any district, and where there is great diversity, great challenges, raise the level of all kids, and all kids have the equal opportunity to access the program. The other thing that I want to commend you on is reducing the mandates. That is something that we have tried to do for a couple of years here, and you have brought that forward again. The other thing that I wanted to speak to is the school trust lands piece. I greatly appreciate you including that in the bill, but I also want to make sure that the committee knows that school trust lands piece is not the real reform that has to happen in the area of school trust lands. We have an opportunity, because now we have, at least some of us have partial knowledge or full knowledge of that the students in this state own an asset, and we are not maximizing that asset to benefit the students. And so I hope that, as I said earlier, this discussion isn't done. We're going to continue, and I hope that a real reform package for school trust lands will be heard in this committee, as in the reform committee and on the House floor. The other thing that I want to commend you on is the MELF piece. I think that is, highly visionary of how do we really start to reduce some of the costs and the issues that we have in the very early years. And I think it is a model that really does can work. The piece on teacher evaluation, I think that we've got a good start here. But this is where I'm going to start talking about some of the problems that I have with the bill. I really feel like we are sometimes just overlaying expectations and new accountability measures and new levels of bureaucracy without taking something away or without truly doing the reform that is necessary in order to have it be a welcome change, a truly welcome change, instead of a burden. So I look forward to, like I said, this is just the beginning, so I look forward to some more discussions and some more compromising on that, and I think that you might be onto something that many more people can embrace. The biggest disappointment of the bill, though, and it's one that I just cannot get over, and I haven't really been able to get over since I feel like I have been here for now going on 8 years, is that I don't feel like we have really addressed the issue of the mainstream 800,000 students that are already in the public school system. There are so many needs, and many of them financial and some not. But we have not, Mr. Chairman, you did for a while start to go there one day. You started talking about the classrooms, that what they're going to look like in 10 years. And you had a vision for that, and I thought we were going to go down that path for a while, and it really got me excited. And so, and I think that, and it had to do with technology, and that is one of the big disappointments of this bill, is that we didn't maximize your knowledge in the world of technology and to benefit the whole public school system in the whole state. But as we've talked about, the discussion isn't over yet, so I hope that we will be able to move all of the classrooms in the state of Minnesota into the 21st century, having some really creative, innovative technology proposals. And then as I'm measuring the pluses and the minuses, there is one piece of the bill that I just cannot get over, and that is the public funding for private schools. And Vice Chair Kelly asked one day, what are you afraid of? And I didn't answer the question that day, but I did want to. What I am afraid of, and I, first of all, I really don't like using the word afraid, because if you ask my parents when I was a teenager, I was afraid of nothing. and that was their fear. When I start looking 10 years down the road, I wonder, are we going to be in the same situation that we are with charter schools? It was a great idea. It was supposed to be innovative. It was supposed to give kids a new opportunity. Or is it the situation where all of a sudden they have no oversight? We need to strengthen their oversight. They have no accountability. Okay, now we need to strengthen their accountability. So what have we just done to the public school system? We have expanded it. So we have really expanded government. So that is the one piece of the bill that I have really the biggest obstacle with, is public money going to private schools and just expanding the scope and of what our department, the Department of Education, and what this committee and what the other stakeholders in education can manage. I would prefer to be addressing the needs of those 800,000 in one obvious way, as I've mentioned already, especially through the area of technology and getting our schools into the 21st century. So with that, I will close by saying the discussion is, as I've said many times, the discussion is not done. And I really hope that after this bill has had lots of conversations, lots of vetting, that it is something that maybe more people like myself can support. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Been a lot of really good comments into looking at this bill, and maybe others that are going to speak, so I'll try not to be too long. But a few things I wanted to share, and I think the first thing to try to lay out my comments was to thinking about it, it's odd the things that pop in your mind as you're sitting here listening to other people talk and how you're going to try to make your point. One of my favorite aunts is a woman who's doesn't like change too much. And as a way to remind herself to try something new, she had a refrigerator magnet.
Representative Loon, I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting you. We have yourself and two other members who wish to talk, okay. And we have session at noon.
Oh.
So what we're going to do is we're going to recess to the call of the chair. We're going to go over to the floor session. My understanding is it's going to be a quick session. We'll come back here. We'll let members give their closing comments, and then we're going to vote. Okay. So my apologies, Representative Loon, but you understand?
Fair enough, and I'm sure people are hanging on the edge of their seats to know what that magnet is.
The cliffhanger. We are recessed to the call of the chair. Members will reconvene this the meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. We will return to members' comments. Representative Loon has the floor. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I know. I hope this is not a complete letdown after the buildup of this. But anyway, I've started to say that in thinking about my comments, what popped into my mind was a refrigerator magnet of one of my favorite aunts, Aunt Lois, in case you're dying to know. And she's actually my aunt by marriage. She's actually my husband's aunt, but I'm very fond of her. And she's a delightful woman, but, you know, certain things, it was just really hard for her to change. You know, we've talked about remodeling her bathroom for, you know, probably as long as I've known her, which I've been married for 22 years, so a really long time, and it's just taking that step is hard. So she has a little magnet that says, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. And that strikes me thinking about this bill today and some of the comments that have been made. No, we're not doing things the way we've always done them, and that's hard. You know, there's some risk in that. There's always a risk of what if it's too much? What if it's not the right direction? What if it's not enough? And there's bold policies in this bill. and we'd all maybe design them a little bit differently or do some of them or not, but I think what I try to keep in mind most of all is they are all directed at trying to get results for kids, and to the sort of the mantra that the chair set out for this committee when we all started meeting in January. Some of the stuff might be difficult to embrace. There's going to take us a little while longer to get our heads around and find the right way. And I think Representative Dietrich said it right when this is kind of the first step in this process, the legislative process. Although we are moving at a fairly rapid pace, overall it's not a real fast run. It takes a lot of time and a lot of input from a lot of people, and a lot of compromises are involved in getting a final product. But I think it's okay to be bold. In all of the testimony that we heard, and I was struck particularly by the woman who testified from the Northside Achievement Zones about how we're at a crisis with regards to how some of our kids are just not making it in our school system, and we have to do something about it. Our society is at risk if we aren't able to reach all of those kids and educate them. So I think the time to be bold is now, and I'm really proud of a lot of the ideas that have been put forward in this bill. Again, you know, we can argue about how exactly to do it, but I think the essence of what we're trying to do is a good thing. I know some of the discomfort and some of the things that have been raised with regards to additional choice that's encompassed in the bill and Representative Woodard's proposal. And again, what I took away from those kids that came to testify, the ones who go to Cristo Rey, almost to a kid, they got up and said how they got to that school was the result of their mother looking at the choice of going there. And their mom convinced them that that was where they needed to be. And their mom felt that was where they would get the best education. And we all know that without parental involvement and parental buy-in and parental partnership with our educators, our kids are not going to be successful. And it may be hard to accept that maybe it's not in the traditional public school setting where those kids are going to be, but if the parents feel they're going to get a better education there and if they're getting results, then maybe it's time to start looking at doing things a little bit different. It's not going to be for every kid. I'm a public school supporter. My kids have both been educated in the public schools, continue to be. And it's great for a lot of our kids, for a majority of our kids. It hasn't been great for all of them. And I think we need to look at doing a few things differently. Another thing that's been raised and I wanted to touch on is integration revenue. And again, Representative Dietrich, I think your comments really struck to the heart of what I've been thinking about that as well. A suburban district doesn't look today like it did 20 or 30 years ago. I mean, I think a lot of people will be surprised to know that at least 20% of the kids in my school district in Eden Prairie are minority kids of color, free and reduced lunch. And you've all been reading about our district in the newspaper. We're going through some real changes in trying to make sure that we're addressing those and integrate those kids into our schools. And it's been a process with plenty of upheaval going on as well. It's important that we continue to have those courageous conversations and find ways to help all of our kids fully fit in and feel comfortable and welcome and part of our schools and part of our society. But the Integration Revenue Program, I have to also say, has funded things that I don't know that we could say clearly has had a defined purpose. And so, you know, looking at doing some of those things differently, I think is appropriate. I've tried to be fairly discerning in my role as a legislator and not look at things from just one prism of thought. And I do, on occasion, you know, join with my friends on the other side of the aisle on some proposals, and they've joined with me, and I really appreciate that. I've also really appreciated working with the people on this committee. I think we have, honestly, one of the best committees around to a person. Everyone on this committee is thoughtful, contributing to the debate, great ideas, and I think that's going to make this whole path serve us well and serve our kids well when we get to a final place at the end of the session with regards to education. So I hope that however the vote falls today, that we are all going to move forward in a spirit of cooperation and keeping in mind that we're doing what's in the best interest of all of our children. There is a place for tradition and what works for our kids, but there's also a time to make changes when we are not helping all of our kids, and we are clearly at that place. So it's time to try some new things. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for, again, being strong enough to pull us through this. I know it has not been an easy process, and I think you do a great job of trying to not let it show, but this is tough stuff we're doing, and making change is difficult. So I hope we can all find it within ourselves to embrace the kind of change that makes a difference for students, and I think that's what we're all here for. So, and I'm going to support this bill.
Thanks, thank you. Representative Myra.
Chairman Garofalo, I do want to thank you for working so hard to get the funding for K through 12. It really is amazing. I have heard over the last number of days and read in articles that there's a huge cut in funding to our core cities, and I really wanted to understand that. And so I spent a few moments and talked to Mr. Strom, because as a new member, I don't want to misunderstand what is going on in these runs. And I just want to express that in looking at the runs, it shows that Minneapolis has a 3% decrease, and St. Paul has a 3.3% decrease. And I just wanted to confirm with Mr. Strom that I was looking at the whole all the figures, and in fact he confirmed that for me. And I think that's important to know. Again, I really want to commend you for the hard work on getting the funding for the programs that we want to do here and focus on the children. I also want to talk a little bit about the grading of schools and the amazing work that's been done in Florida. That portion of this bill has been modeled after success. And they had success before they had the third grade retention. And one of the things I'd really like the public and members to know is that Florida in 2009 spent $1,100 less per pupil than what we spend here. So we have made a significant commitment to our school children in this state. And in looking at the results in Florida, it is amazing to see the gains made among our minorities, among minorities and those that are in poverty. So again, Chairman Garofalo, I commend you for your hard work on this, and thank you, and I will be supporting it.
Thanks Representative Meyer. Representative Bills.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to say that Representative Peterson was probably smart in not preparing his statements, because I prepared something and then I started taking notes and now I have 4 pages. But don't worry, I'm going to adjust. It's always the last 2 minutes of class you wrap things up in a
hurry. The clerk will take the roll.
Yes, exactly.
Representative Bills.
But I sure have appreciated this procedure, and I've appreciated as a teacher who's taught everything from ninth grade civics to advanced placement American government and politics, survey courses in economics to advanced placement micro and macroeconomics, ninth grade to 12th grade. I've appreciated being around this process. There are occasions when I am disappointed in it, but still I hope. And hope's not a great strategy. So I know that this will come back to my students, and whether they're whatever party they're in or whatever stripe they are ideologically, I hope that it builds better decision makers down the road. I thank Chairman Garofalo for his work. I thank him for placing us in a seating arrangement. I have seating charts in my classes just to help me get to learn the names of the students, because that's how I work. And the 12th graders, when they walk in, are always disappointed with a seating chart. They want to sit wherever they want. And without him doing that, I would not have gotten to know the two gentlemen to my right and my left, and gotten to know the Iron Range and the urban areas of this state a little bit better, I think I can say. And I really respect those two guys and everybody on the committee. I do support the direction of the bill from the target numbers, and I still teach first hour every day, and we are on spring break this week, so thank goodness. But I do share those target numbers, whether it's the governor's or the from the House, and then I share the other numbers from the other aspects or elements of our government. And when teachers see that, there hasn't been a negative comment yet. And I think they feel respected by what we're trying to do, whether it's Governor Dayton or what we're trying to do in the House, just by the amount of funding. So I do respect, I feel respected as a teacher with that target number. Would more money be great? I mean, I guess, you know, yes, there are always those avenues, to go, and I'm still trying to figure out what fully funding education means. I've asked so many teachers, and I want to know a number, just quantify it. But and we discuss that, in the faculty, in the staff room, and everything. And that said, there are the direction in terms of achievement areas, in scholarships to the Principal Leadership Institute. Then those opportunities, the small school reforms. I think there are so many people who live in the suburbs who came from the rural parts of Minnesota and Iowa, Wisconsin. I talked to them all, and I came from an area where there were more Holsteins than people. And I do hear what Representative Fabian is saying in terms of wanting to make sure that our small schools have those resources. I've pulled no punches in terms of, you know, me as an individual teacher wanting performance evaluations, wanting to be paid by performance. That's just me. I am not speaking for all teachers, but neither do any. There are no teachers who speak for all teachers. We're all different, just like all of our students are different, and we have different thoughts and ideologies as well, but I do like that direction. There are many other things I like. There's a couple of cautions too, and one of them, not cautions, but just things that make me pause. And one thing that has is the early childhood piece, and that is, we're all on board. It's a very, we all want to be, and sometimes maybe a little bit too aggressively, we want to stand next to the kids politically. And as a teacher, and I would say as a teacher, you know, be here to create that efficient, thorough, and uniform system, but let's not politicize it so much. We are here for a purpose. And with the early childhood component, that's one of the things that as you walk around, everybody likes to talk about, as you walk, door knocking, talking to people in your district, everybody's seems to be on board with early childhood. But yet, and we talk about data and metrics, until Miss Efren comes up, and then we kind of we cringe a little bit about the data and metrics. And I've actually went in and turned the lights down and pulled the blinds and actually got on and checked out some of her data. And I would just encourage you to keep doing that, in terms of if you want to make those decisions, that's great. But then be there all the time, and we can definitely find a way forward there, I think, with this number of very intellectual people on this committee. Speaking to the efficient, thorough, and uniform, those three words, and general, taken four words, taken out of the Constitution, in terms of efficient, as I look through this thing, I hope for efficiency in terms of how we're deciding to fund. I know one thing that is very efficient, though, and that is any teacher, despite their political stripe and how they use the resources in their room, and I think we all work really hard to do that. I think there was a great comment from Chris Stewart again. I took my notes yesterday. Don't talk about good or bad teachers. We're all working very hard, and it doesn't matter, again, what stripe you are or ideology you are. We're working very hard. I really enjoyed his words. Thorough. I think we need to work on thorough. We have promises to keep and miles to go before we sleep. That's a little Robert Frost. Yep. And then the uniform. That from a social studies teacher. Yeah. Then the uniform. Really. I think we have a lot of work to do there, and some honest discussions that need to take place here on out. But you know, in terms of things that I'm looking forward to talking about the rest of this session and possibly next year is the technology piece. That's the direction. We saw that in a presentation here, and the future is so bright in terms of using technology, and I encourage us to take a look at that, but that's been spoken of a couple of times. Yeah, you know, the uniformity of funding, the efficiencies that could be built in, and that, and we need to start looking at when teachers feel an administrative heavy piece in terms of all of the work we do, not so much in our classroom, but when we're trying to put our curriculum together, and how many times, you know, how often is that happening, and how often is that cycle taking place. So with that, I'll be done with my comments, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bills. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Impressed by all the great speeches, and I'm kind of a guy of fewer words, so I'll be relatively short, but I was thinking when we were campaigning last fall and talking to people and early this winter before we came down here, at least out in my part of the state, there was a lot of concern, maybe fear is the word, about what was going to happen to education funding, and hearing rumors of massive cuts to pupil aid. And I'm very thankful and very glad that we are able to keep the funding at the level it is. I want to say thanks to the chairman for that. That, to me, is the wonderful part about this bill, that it was not easy. There's a lot of competing interests for the limited funding that's available here this time around, and I think our committee in education did very, very well in that area. I do have to admit I do have a little heartburn about the arbitration piece. I'm a small-town guy and believe in local control strongly, and I think whether you feel this is good or bad, it does put another layer of bureaucratic rule on top of our negotiation process, but we'll see how that works out. But I will support the bill. And the last thing I'd like to say is that all of us around this table feel that we want to do what's best for kids. We all have that strong feeling. And teachers play a big part in doing that. And we want our teachers to be a part of these reform processes and buy into these things. And hopefully that's going to happen. This is a good bill in terms of some of the things it does, and make some good reform ideas and plans. And but we need to buy in by everybody that works with our kids and tries to make our system better. So with that, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. And the chair will offer some. Representative Ansels, I haven't heard from you yet. Do you want to speak or not?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hadn't intended on speaking, but I will say that with regard to my colleagues, Representative Davney and my new colleague, Representative Bills, and I, Representative Davney represents the present. I represent, unfortunately, the past. And Representative Bills represents the future. And that also might be an unfortunate. With that, I think.
Thank you, Representative Ansel. I'll make some brief comments. I'll save the speech on the bill for the floor when that comes up. I did want to address a couple of things, and I don't think my friend Representative Greiling meant this when she said it, but you had said that we are freezing compensatory funding, and I think what you meant, and please feel free to chime in if I'm wrong, but I think what you meant to say is that we're delinking the funding from that. The compensatory elements are all going up according to forecast. No district is receiving less in compensatory funding than what was in forecast. Some are getting more, but we are not. We're not freezing compensatory. The growth factors and everything. We did not change the concentration factor, and that was an item of a significant discussion within the caucus. So, Adam, I think that's what you meant. In terms of, there's been a lot of discussion about the special education piece, and I know that for members that have been here before, this is. Different. We are passing the finance bill, but we still have policy deadlines later to come. And as Representative Erickson mentioned earlier in her comments, we're going to be taking a look at this. We're going to be taking a look at ways that we can streamline back office functions, not frontline service cuts. We've received lots of feedback from school districts about the concerns about the current structure of special education, and I know Chairman Erickson and I have discussed this. So this journey is not done, in that there's ways to reduce that special education cross subsidy. Certainly, we could put more money into it, and if we look at the historical charts on this, we can see that really there's no revenue stream to the state of Minnesota, even with tax increases, that could possibly meet the growth curve that's been occurring in special education. The other thing is we can be looking at the inputs on our students that are going into special education, and what are the strategies and tactics we can implement to make sure that we are proactively and preemptively eliminating these special education costs. And then third and finally is the area of seeing if there's ways that we can redesign and restructure and reform that system. And I know the chairman of the policy committee is committed to that, and that'll be a conversation that'll be ongoing, as it was when my friend Representative Greiling was chairing the committee. I want to again thank the staff, Ms. Larson, Mr. Crow, Mr. Strom, Ms. Peichel, Mr. Solem, and Ms. Johnson for all the work and all the time that they put in. It is, you know, this is my seventh year in the legislature, and I really thought that I understood the full amount of work that staff put in. But until you sit in this chair and you're making requests of people, that's only when you really get to find it out. And I have 100% confidence and trust in the six people that I get to work with up here. And I just want to say thanks to each and every one of you. And if it wasn't for you, this place would come to a screeching halt. And the people of Minnesota would be far worse off for it. And I think the House staff just beats the snot out of the Senate staff. I think you guys are way better than so. I want to thank you. There's a lot in this bill, and we're going to talk about that later. I do want to say, and maybe after we vote on the bill, I'll just go through and talk to members and just offer some closing comments. It is certainly my goal that I would like to have this committee meet once this bill passes today beyond this, but I certainly cannot guarantee that. And so I'd like to offer some closing comments. But with that, the clerk will take the roll on the bill. And I would ask a green vote for members, or a yes vote.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Kelly.
Yes.
Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Anzell.
No.
Representative Bills.
Yes.
Representative Breinert.
No.
Representative Dabney.
No.
Representative Dietrich.
No.
Representative Downey.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Fabian?
Yes.
Representative Greiling?
No.
Representative Loon?
Aye.
Representative Mariani?
No.
Representative Myra?
Yes.
Representative Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Slocum?
Yes.
Representative Ward? Representative Ward? Yes. Representative Woodard?
Yes.
With 12 votes in favor and 7 votes against, House File 934, as amended, is passed and referred to the Tax Committee. Members, I had made some note cards this weekend about each member and what I liked about each one of you, and just to offer some comments on them. And for the second day in a row, I left the note cards at home. So I'm going to go by memory, though, and I'm just briefly going to go around the table. And I just want to thank Representative Breinert. I know that I feel like I don't know you as well as I do some of the other members of the committee, but I really hope that the Dayton administration follows the advice that I've given them on working with Representative Peterson and that teacher effectiveness bill. You have a wealth of talent and knowledge in that area, and it would be a good thing for you to be participating in this process. I strongly believe that we're going to have a teacher effectiveness bill at the end of this session. Of course, it's going to require a Republican legislature and a DFL governor to happen. But that's going to happen, and I really hope you're in that process. Representative Woodard, I want to say thank you again for carrying the bill. That means more to me than any other piece of legislation going through the process this year. I've always believed in that, and you've been here. This is your end of your third month, and you did a better job presenting that bill and articulating that bill than I could have thinking about it for 6 years. So thanks a lot. And Representative Downey, the human reform machine, man, if there's a if there's a problem, Downey's got a bill for it. And I'm just continually impressed by, I mean, it's a running joke. Where's Downey? He's in committee presenting a bill. And he you literally are, kid, Representative Downey. And you're just I'm so glad that you asked to be on this committee, and I'm so glad that I manipulated the process to get you on this committee. So it's you're a great addition, and I'm happy. Happy you're here. Representative Dietrich, you know, you and I we're friends from the old playground. And I don't think you realize what a good friend you are to me. You know, I remember back to 2006 and what was going on. And you were a better friend to me than I could describe. And I don't think sometimes you realize that. And I'm really glad that you're here, and just wanted to say thanks. Representative Myra, you know, I think it was about a year ago that you and I were sitting in Panera Bread talking. And
2 years ago.
No, maybe. No, and who would have thought that this is where we would be today? And thanks for working on that A to F grading. And I know it's a lot of work and it's a lot of complicated issues, but you carried yourself with grace and dignity, and you did a fantastic job on that. And Representative Mariani, my partner in crime, just the Alternative Pathways Bill wouldn't have happened without you. I mean, as much as my name is listed as the author of that bill, you know, there's a reason why I had you give the closing statements on that bill. That's because you deserved it, and I want to say thank you. Representative Loon, all the good stories I have about you and I can't say in public, so I don't know what to do. But I think, Representative Loon, I've told you this privately, and I want to say it publicly, you are far stronger and far smarter than you give yourself credit for, and I just hope that you keep fighting in this legislature and you keep doing what's right, because we need more people like you, and we need more voices like you, and I want to thank you. Representative Anderson, you said it best. You are a man of few words. You are a man of few words, but you're a man of strong actions. And sometimes, you know, one of the rules I heard when I got here is that the less somebody talks, the more you should listen to them. And I've noticed that when you get up and speak, whether it's on the floor, in caucus, or in this committee, there is a silence that goes over the room. And you are a statesman, and people respect you for that. Representative Quam, I mean this as a compliment, not as an insult, but I don't think there's another member of this committee whose brain thinks exactly like mine does. We're both engineers, and I meant that as a compliment. I'm not ripping you. You and I are both engineers. We're data-driven. We're solution. We cut to the chase, and we focus, and we're in sync on that. And I want to thank you for all your work on topics that are provocative and controversial. Representative Erickson, you know, I remember at our retirement banquet back in 2008, seeing your retirement speech. And it was one of the saddest speeches that night. That's what I remember from it. I'm so glad that you're back with us, and I'm so glad that you've been able to help me through this process and offer some really good historical guidance on it. Representative Fabian, you know, I continue to be I don't know if I'm jealous or impressed that it took me 7 years for me to get my bill passed and signed by the governor, and you did it in like 6 weeks. But I think that's a testament to you. And you know, whenever I meet people from your district, they say what a special, special guy you are. And I'm glad that you're part of this process in a reasonable and moderating voice that is needed in this institution. Representative Slocum, I want to thank you, another partner in crime. You more so than other members, when we disagree, I always find myself doubting myself, because I know that you care, and I know that you genuinely care, and you're not here to throw rocks, not that any of us are, but I always take your words with a stronger attribute. Representative Peterson, can you believe that you and I haven't even known each other a year? All those phone calls, all the times we talk, and we haven't even known each other a year, and I'm just so impressed with how you've handled yourself in the teacher effectiveness bill. You dove in head first, and you're studying it. You're a leader, and you have a very bright future. And please, you know, when you and I disagree, challenge me, because you can do it, and you've already done it a couple times this session. And just please keep up that attitude. You know, Representative Bills, it seems like Cindy, you, Julie, and I went out to dinner. It seemed like it was yesterday. And I love that you were able to explain the fractional reserve banking system to me in a way that no one else could. And having the first time we met at the Long Branch Saloon and Eatery in Farmington, I knew right away why the kids always pick you to give their commencement address. And that's because you're a great teacher, and those skills that you'd use to educate your students, I know you can use those skills to educate members and educate the public in this job. And the citizens of your district and the state are fortunate to have you here. Representative Dabney, I tell you, I miss the days when you and I could walk into committee and just crack jokes and have fun and have Representative Greiling scold us. But, you know, I think, you know, Representative Dabney knows this, is that, you know, as much as I like to brag about the accuracy of my crystal ball, you know, I did spend the fall visiting your district and visiting the schools because I thought this is where I was going to be. And there's a long journey from point A to point Z, and you and I have had good conversations about it, but I want you to know, and I think you do know, where I want to end up in this, where we want to go. And, as I've said with Representative Greiling and you, there's a little bit of kabuki theater in this job, and we need to make sure that we both understand when we're doing kabuki theater and when it's real. And it's always real, but it's important that we understand that, because the alternative is, if I don't understand it, then I'm not going to listen to you guys, and I don't think that's a good spot for me. And I'm going to finish with you, Representative Greiling, but I want to go to Representative Kelly first. And Representative Kelly, you know, you're a statesman and a leader, and the only thing that amazes me is you were stupid enough to let me talk you into running for the legislature. But if you've been down in Red Wing and you've met the Kelly clan and you see, you know, how Tim conducts himself, Representative Kelly conducts himself, and it's always family first. It's always family first and always what's good for the community. And I just am, I'm really glad that you and I got to know each other, and I'm really glad that you came up here. And again, the people of Minnesota, on a part bipartisan basis, they're lucky to have you up. And then I'll close with my friend, Representative Greiling, and that is that I remember I closed the committee last year by saying that you're a really good chair, and that other chairs could learn from you. But I have to tell you, as good of a chair as you are a much better minority lead. And I mean that, and I think you know what I mean by that. You are effective, and as I said with Representative Dabney, we just need to make sure that we're working out when we're delivering our messages in publicly and when we're being a little bit more sober and serious. And that's a responsibility that I have to have. But I look forward to having a committee hearing in your district next year, just like you did for me, and I hope it's a tradition that this committee holds in the future. So I just want to thank members for that. Again, it is my goal. I would like for this committee to be able to continue to meet, but sometimes, as Representative Greiling knows, it's not always the chair's decision, as much as it is. And in closing, I want to just thank the members of the Majority Caucus. I think sometimes people think that I make these decisions. That's not the leadership style I've employed. It's been to have each and every one of you involved in that, and I hope that each of you can look at this bill and see part of what you have in there. So I have no other comments. Representative Greiling, did you want to say something before we...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do. And I want to say, first of all, had I only known you were off having lunch and recruiting candidates so much, I would have kept you much busier on the committee. I recruited candidates for 2004 when our caucus started turning things around. I know that is the way that you do get back majority, so I'm going to have to put a little thought to helping out with that in our caucus. But I do think I'm a better minority member than you were. You were a lot more fun and nice, and I'm taking a little harder line, and you know, maybe for a variety of reasons. But I just have to say I have enjoyed this committee. I think that there are a lot of bright and hardworking and talented freshmen and others on the committee that are very impressive. I haven't, as you know, liked the work product, but I would never say anything but good things about the workers and the people who are doing what they believe, just like I do what I believe. But Mr. Chair, I think in a lot of ways, even though I'm a better minority member than you, and you do have a lot to learn as a chair, like managing time. I never once members had a night meeting, and being a German. But now that we have an Italian, we have all this allowing all of us to talk, all this love, and we're now having our, is this our third meeting to try to close out this bill? But, Mr. Chair, I think as far as grace and charm and fun and good humor and, you know, speaking from the heart to all of us today and this sort of thing, you're far superior to the chair that I was and aspire to be again. And when you are the minority lead again, I will tutor you on how to be just like me in that regard as well. Thank you.
Thank you. So, members, thank you again. And, you know, if we meet, it won't be for a while, but it certainly will be this chair's goal that we have that opportunity. And I look forward to staying in touch with members throughout this. And with that, the committee is adjourned. Thank you.